Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How are we doing, gents? Hope everyone's well at home. You all right?
Comfy, yeah. Chris.
I'm comfy. You don't look very comfy, John. No.
Looks like I've got a bad Gregory Peck, doesn't it?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I'm all right.
You'll have to excuse the background noise. We're pre-live show, Middlesbrough, and there's karaoke going on across the road. He sounds. I think he's on the cusp of getting a rocket record contract over there.
He's ruined it for me. He started off well, and he's just gone hell for leather and ruined it. Very near.
I was just screaming.
Yeah. Hope everybody's well. Malcolm Christie part two.
Yeah, and a little bit of a different theme to it this week.
It's completely different to part one, but... emotional, I feel, is the right word to use.
Part one was very good.
Yeah, just the way that his career went thereafter. Like I think we said, like Malcolm Christie was one of them for me. Like, remember him, and then what happened to Malcolm Christie? And he reveals all.
Yeah, sad.
Just wondering why I never got the short memo.
Well, my jeans are over there.
Oh, mine are as well.
This is my travelling attire.
Oh, is it?
This is pre-show, John. Pre-show comfort.
I'm not going out like this. Look at state to me.
You're getting changed as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, I had possibly the worst day of my life.
Oh, my God.
On Thursday. What? I'm not even joking.
It can't keep happening, can it?
I'm not even joking.
He's got a better memory. He's got a better imagination, him, than
honestly.
J.K. Rowling.
What was the... So we had the live show Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's happened there?
Thursday, I got home. We went out in the afternoon. Rose got a bag of crisps. I don't know what they were. They're some wheat things. And she put them on side and they were there for a couple of hours. They'd gone soft, but they were them that are still nice soft. You know, like this, you can still eat them. I thought, I'll tidy up a bit round house. So I got a carrier bag. You know, you get a carrier bag and hang it on cupboard door.
Yeah.
For pottering round and chucking stuff in. And I come back down. I went upstairs doing a few bits. I come back down. This bag of crisps were in the bin. So I thought, what'd you chuck them away for? So I got them back out again, waited. So I thought, there's still some in. So in one swift motion, I've put them in my hand, straight in the mouth.
Cat litter.
Chewing. In my teeth on this side, it's crumbly, but soft at the same time. It's got a strange texture. So I was like, what's that? I've run to the sink, spat out brown, and she's gone into utility room. Cat's come out of litter. The shit's fallen off him. She's put it in crisp bag and chucked it in bin. It rolled in my teeth. Oh. I ran upstairs. I've never scrubbed my teeth so much in my life.
Oh, well, what, cat shit?
I was chewing on cat shit.
What was it like on the palate?
Oh, it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice. It was wheaty again, a bit like the crisp, but no.
That's up there with the most filthy.
That's horrible, isn't it?
I feel like there's more to come.
No, yeah, no.
I wouldn't say that would be the worst day in your life. Maybe a bad 10 minutes, but not the worst day in your life.
Chewing on a shit?
Yeah. But not... the worst day of your life. You've had worse experiences than that, surely.
I don't know.
We also got the picture sent through of your mate from who got clattered.
Oh, the lad who got battered and bruised. Yeah.
Have we?
Have we got
put it in the group.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I must have missed
it. Can have it popping up on screen.
He said he didn't get hit in the nose. It was on the back of the head.
I don't like the truth getting away with that story. Are you looking forward to tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
You look smart, John.
I know.
I've never seen you as smart.
Double denim.
It's not denim, is it? It's a cotton shirt.
Double denim,
it's though. A linen cotton blend, Chris.
Is it?
For the audio viewers, I'm just smiling, smirking.
Last one, innit?
Yeah, the last live show.
We have to say a little bit for the Queen, aren't we?
You want to do a speech, Biggin?
No, but obviously just terrible news, innit?
God save the King.
I know. Have you seen his fingers? He's got very strange Judd Winders.
I'll have to have a look.
A little bit like as though somebody's pumped his hand up.
You do look like a full pack of Richmond.
And that ring on his little finger, it honestly must hurt. It's tight.
Is it?
Like, yeah. Tight as in stopping circulation, tight.
Gout, that. Too much rich living.
You think?
Mm.
But, yeah, God save the king.
We have got another live show coming up, haven't we?
We have, actually, yeah.
Homecoming. Hey, yeah. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to checking out a beefer afterwards.
Sunday night.
Ooh.
I don't know what's up on Sunday nights now, but yeah, we're doing a show at the Garrison in Barnsley.
So one extra show added, Barnsley. What date, John?
13th of November, Sunday night, Jerry Taggart.
Mr. Jerry Taggart, so...
To be fair, I think Tags has been as best guest.
Yeah, so it'll be a good one. We'll put a link in the description. If you can make your way to Barnsley, then come on down. Or if you live in Barnsley.
And we keep getting a bit of pressure from Ireland, don't we? Lads, when the fuck are you coming to Dublin? So we might have to get one. Unfortunately, we might have to book a weekend away in December and get one in over there.
Sorry, love, it's work.
What can we do?
It's
give
work.
The people what they want.
We might not make fuck all off it, but we'll have a good bloody kick at ball, won't we?
Should we get Malcolm in?
Yeah, yes. Let's get him in.
For part two. If you've not already subscribed to the YouTube channel, by the way, please do. That'd be nice. Yeah,
the percentages are coming down. What was that fact you pulled out? Only 50%. Of the people watching
are subscribed. So if you're watching and you're not subscribed, just sort your shit out.
Don't cost you out, does it?
No, you just have to press a button.
Oh, one click.
And then you can press that little bell button, apparently. You press that and it tells you every time we get a new
so you get notifications
on.
And
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
No brainer, innit?
Yeah.
Straight on it. Right, let's get Malcolm
out. Come on then, Malcolm.
Talking about that, Man United being a massive fan and everything, one of the highlights of your career must have been, because we talk about that season before, Derby on the verge of relegation, got to go to Old Trafford, not expected to get anything.
Yeah, well, it is the highlight of my career. There's no taking back. And I think that, I suppose you guys will understand, you know, talking the way that I got into football and maybe that, you know, sliding doors moment where I could have been a Manchester United fan sitting in the Stretford End watching, you know, that game as a fan. You know, there's a reality of what potentially that could have happened. And then fast forward, you know, two to three years later, that, you know, we've got to go to Old Trafford with a depleted Derby County team, which we had, and get a result, was just like my dream game, my dream moment. And
it's rather over stuff, really.
I remember in the United were being presented with the league trophy that day as well. So it's a bit of you can imagine that the atmosphere is crowd. No, it's like, by then, no, I was like, obviously I was a Derby fan by that point. I'd sort of switched allegiances a little bit. You know, I didn't have the posters up in the bedroom wall or anything like that. So, you know, for me to, I never forget, like they put the team sheet up, the Man U team up. And I remember looking at that team and thinking, we can beat these. Weird, because like I would never have dreamt of saying that, because they rested a few of the players. Barthez was in goal. They had Ronnie Walwork at the back. Michael Stewart was playing, but they did have they had Andy Cole, Teddy Sheringham. So they had like a mixture of players. David Beckham was playing as well, and I just remember putting the team sheet up and thinking we can beat these, and I think everybody else sort of felt that as well. And the game sort of panned out for me, you know, perfectly. You know, if you'd have said to me before that match that we were going to win 1-0 and I was going to score the only goal scoring in the Stretford End, it's strange in a way that I look back and have that as my special moment, because it wasn't winning anything as such, you know. I've got Roy Keane in me here thinking, oh, we're celebrating avoiding relegation. You know, it's hell, isn't it? You know what I mean? But we did it. It was an incredible, incredible day. My parents, again, when I was reflect back how they were thinking and feeling, we're in the crowd. And I, as a Manchester United fan, still inside of me, I got applauded off the pitch at the end of the match by all the United fans as well. I mean, I'll probably get reminded, you know, if you type in my name on YouTube or whatever, it will come up the miss that I had. I had like an unbelievable chance to make it 2-0 second half. Lee Morris, Kincladsey played the ball through. Lee Morris pulled the ball back. I was probably from here, Brownie to you, goal there. Ball got played along and I fucking put it wide.
Like, I'd have done the same, mate. Don't worry about it.
And then afterwards, people were like, oh, what about the miss?
What about the goal? Sorry?
What about, oh, what a terrible miss that is. I went, well, have a look at the final score of that match and let me know about that. Because honestly, after the game, I got more people talking to me about the miss than I did the goal. Weird. You know, even now, like I say, people sometimes, oh, what about the miss? What about, who cares about the miss? Who cares? I mean, I shouldn't even be talking about it. I shouldn't even be bringing it up. Yeah. But I am.
We had loads of people asking about the hat-trick that never was as well.
Yeah.
And I still don't think it was a foul.
Is this the season after?
Yeah. Yeah, so Jim Smith had left. John Gregory had took over. John Gregory, yeah. Is any opinions of John Gregory?
We've had some tales about John Gregory.
Yeah.
I like first impressions.
I loved him.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really, really... He was like what we needed at that time. We'd been so used to Jim and his ways and his demeanour. Colin Todd took over. Bear in mind, Colin was Jim's assistant who took all the training anyway.
Same, so nothing changed, really.
Same shit, different bucket kind of thing. Yeah? So then he left. Then Billy McEwen took over for a short period of time. Well, Billy was the coach anyway. So nothing changed there. Then suddenly, obviously, Gregory left Villa and then I can't get Gregory. I mean, Gregory was like quite a big name manager.
Next England manager. Yeah.
So like, I was thinking, nah, he ain't going to come. Then I think, he used to play, mind you, he was an ex-Derby player, wasn't he? So then he got linked and he came in and I'm thinking, fucking hell, that is a good signing for us. That really, really good. Honestly, he was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
I loved his training sessions. I loved his whole demeanor. I loved how he used to turn up for training.
This
in the
for
best
you
car.
Is only your second ever manager.
He turned up in the best car and he got out of the car and he was immaculate. His hair was immaculate. He smelled nice. His clothes. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's how a Premier League manager needs to be. You know, obviously, some people would look at that and go, what a dick.
Yeah.
What a knob. Oh, look at him. Thinks he's, you know, used to join him with training. Everyone tried to kick him. Do you know what I mean? Because he still thought he could. And he could still play, in all fairness. But I really liked him. I thought he was a breath of fresh air. Exactly what we needed at the time. And do you know what? He got everybody in. Got everybody in straight away. And he basically bullshitted everyone. He told them how good they were. He told me how good I was. I went in there and he sat me down. I thought, well, fucking hell. I'm looking around the... Because this was Jim Smith's office. I was like, fucking someone else is sat there. I was thinking, the only time I've ever been in here is for a fucking bollocking. Right? So there I am sat there and he went, do you know what? I really rate you as a player. So fucking straight away like that. Oh, okay. There's not a lot of difference between you and Michael Owen. I'm like, well, fucking what? Bear in mind, Owen's just won the Ballon d'Or. I went, okay. Right? He said, do you know the difference between you and Owen? I went, I felt like saying about 30 fucking goals. But he went, he's got Steven Gerrard. Right? And I'm fucking looking, expecting fucking Gerrard to fucking pop in the fucking, what are we signing? So he went, if we can get the ammunition into you, I'm telling you, you will play and score like Michael Owen. I was fucking sat there and you can imagine, I fucking walked out of that room and I thought, fucking hell, if there was a brick wall there, I'd have fucking smashed through it for him.
And he wears on
rules. Honestly, yeah. Yeah. So, I'd heard him say, I've heard him in an interview afterwards, his time actually, that he said, do you know what these players need? They just need to be told how good they are, how special they are.
Confidence.
And do you know what? Everyone in the team, he did the same to Lee Morris. No, Lee Morris, Jim Smith did not trust Lee. He would not play him for whatever reason. He had a few injuries. Again, he told the same bullshit to Lee. Yeah. Told him how good he was. And it just transformed us all. We were all went out there. And I don't think we ever had that. He sort of did it a bit sneaky. Do you know what I mean? He didn't like, we weren't stood out inside his office going, right, you're next in. Do you know what I mean? We were like, what did he say to you? And told me I was really good. Oh, did he? He said, oh, fucking lie. Do you know what I mean? So he was like, he did it really, really clever. So he got people in at different stages and he just told everybody how good they were. And you know what? We went out, we had Tottenham, first game. Tottenham were a decent team, Prem. And We beat him 1-0. First game, and there was he, scored the goal. He was fucking jumping down the touchline, Gregory. Yeah, in front of the Derby fans. Yeah, fucking like this. And you know what? I was thinking, wow, what a transformation this is. So that was gone along that time. So we've had a few little results, and we had Man U come to to Pride Park. So we were still in the relegation mire. He took over when we were in the shit. So he was trying to come in to save us. If he'd have come in before, when Jim Smith got the sack, I know that's irrelevant because he was at Villa, but if he'd have come in then, I think in the October when Jim got the sack, if he'd have come in then, we'd have stayed up, 100%. But he came in too late after the Colin Todd experience. Colin, we ended up getting thumped left, right and centre when Colin come in, and then took over too late, had some good performances, culminating in, I think, that performance that a lot of Derby fans remember, because Man United came to us, they were going for the league with Arsenal, so they had their full shebang out, you know, all the players, Van Nistelrooy, Solskjaer, Veron, Keane, Scholes, Giggs, it was the proper team. And again, no one gave us a real hope, but we just felt like we could maybe full house, live on Sky. The game for me, you know, I scored two goals. It was 2-2. I ended up equalising with about 12 minutes to go, make it 2-2. And I think in injury time, Branko Strupa took a shot. Bartez comes out, spills it straight in front. There's me. I'm already charging in towards him. Bang, straight at the same time. Go in. Ball comes out. I take a little touch. And I hit it in outside of my right foot into the goal. Fucking place rups. Fucking hell, 3-2. Got fucking hat trick. First time ever a hat trick against Man U in the Premier League, because I knew the stats, mine, because I was like a fucking Man U fan. Like, there I am. I thought, before I'm going to celebrate, like, fucking look round, make sure it's at the goal, make sure it's a goal. I look round and the referee's fucking pointing down there where Bartez was. I was like, oh my God, I do not believe it. Gutted, absolutely devastated. You know, they like bang the cameras, don't they? Straight away, you come off the pitch. Oh, what about that? I was like, oh, well, you know, just one of them things. And, you know,
media training paid off again.
You know, we went in there at the same time and, you know, a bit of fucking inside. I was going, oh, I do not bloody believe that. Obviously, Gregory came out and he was going, biased decision. If that had been at the Stretford end of Old Trafford, I know what would have been given. Ferguson come out, didn't he? He said, Christie's goal's fine. Not a problem with that. It was a goal. And obviously to hear Alex Ferguson, my messiah, my God, you know, it's the first time and only time, and I've got it on camera, like he said my name, do you know what I mean?
We're like, back in the fan mode then,
incredible, because I'd always, you know, that Man United link runs, that theme runs through, and I never forget, I'd had that scout come and watch me, remember at Nuneaton Borough, where Man United scout was there, but it was like nothing ever materialised, and I always wanted to be linked with Man U. No matter where I want, somewhere along the line, and I never forget it. I've still got the cuttings because my dad kept the clippings even to this day. So if I played well and scored, he wouldn't just buy the Daily Mail, he'd buy the Express, the Star, the Sun.
Get the lot.
He got the fucking lot, right? So he'd go down the news agency, get the lot. I never forget it. It was in the newspaper. I think it was around about 2002. We got relegated, and it said Ferguson in for Gabriel Batistuta. Argentina. I was reading it. Fucking hell. Okay, yeah. And if that one doesn't fall through, then he's interested in Derby's Malcolm Christie. I was like, fucking, I'm going to Man U. Fucking Daily Star. You know when it's like, it's as so obscure as you can get. You know, like the transfer rumours. You know, when you're sort of obscure. I was like, oh, fucking hell, I'm going to Man U here. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, and I still got that clipping to the day. And that's as close as I probably ever got to joining Man U, is having that newspaper clipping. But to hear Alex Ferguson say my name, and I'd always wanted, you know, or dreamt that somewhere along the line I would affect, play my part in them potentially not winning the league, but you know, by that stage, you know, it wasn't really, it was Derby County was running through my blood really. So, you know, I was in love with that club rather than Man U.
Feeling so connected to the club, like you said, but almost like a fan. How was the relegation then? Was it something you took personally?
Yes. Yeah. But I suppose it's the one regret that I have in my time that I never played in a successful Derby County team. When I got into the team, it was struggle, relegation. So when we reflect back at the time, I suppose, their memories for Derby County fans are incredible. Do you know what I mean? Look where they are now. Mm. You know what I mean? League One, have they even got an existence at the moment with what's going on? So them fans must look back and think, wow, what an incredible time that was to be part of the club. And that's why I suppose many fans fondly remember them times of being good times. But yeah, to get relegated, it was really, really hard to take, because the hardest of it was everyone expected us to be promoted the next season because of the players we had, right? And everyone went, we'd get up straight away. Fucking hell. Got up straight away. They nearly got relegated the next season. So what they thought, they'll keep all their players, me included, Chris, sold a few when the financial difficulties kicked in that following season. Changing a losing mentality to a winning one's I felt that really hard.
It happens quite regularly, doesn't it? That the teams that come down from the Prem
struggle.
Some bounce back.
Yeah. And we had a target on our back because of the players we had. Like obviously I stayed, Ravinelli stayed. We had kind of big name players in there that everyone wanted to come to Pride Park, yeah, because it was we'd been in the Prem for like what by that stage like 5 or 6 years, so it was like everyone wanted to come, and we were going to some, and we'd I think as players become acclimatized to going to these nice stadiums, you know, the Old Trafford's, Liverpool's, suddenly we were going to like Rotherham, Gillingham, fucking getting changed in porter cabins and shit, what I mean, Brighton at the Withdean. And it was just we're having players around us who weren't maybe acclimatised to what that was going to bring.
Can't imagine Fabrizio enjoying the porter cabin.
I don't know. And it just didn't work out in any way, shape or form. And obviously I would had been touted to leave the club during that relegation sort of summer as such, which didn't happen. I should have gone to Middlesbrough during that summer, but didn't. I ended up going out with England under 21s at the time to the European Championships 2002 and didn't kick a ball. So I was out there, the centre forwards at the time were Defoe and Crouch. So I went out there finishing that season thinking, right, I'm going to go to England under 21s. Bear in mind, I'd been involved in all the qualifiers pretty much. Come on a sub, started a few of the games. Thought, right, go out here, fucking shop window. Similar to where I'd been, like at Neaton Borough, all the scouts there from all the Prem clubs, I'd go there, play and do really well. Bear in mind as well that I'd been tapped up previous by Steve Round, who had came to my house at the end of that season. He was assistant at Middlesbrough.
We just knocked on?
Yeah, just knocked on the door after one of the games, turned up, opened the door, Steve Round here. Okay, what's he doing here? Bear in mind, I'm Derby County player and he's Middlesbrough's assistant manager, I think, at the time. Do you want to come up to Middlesbrough and have a look round? I'm thinking, hey, is that allowed? Is that
still naive?
Is that supposed to happen? But obviously at the time he said, look, we're interested in signing you. You know, we want to show you round things. We'll show you, the places you can live, the training ground. We'll come and meet Steve, or you already know, but we're going to have a chat with him. I think, it's a bit uneasy. Like, bring your dad up if you want, yeah. So we ended up going up the road to meet Steve. He showed us round. I was seduced straight away by the training ground. I was used to a derelict Ram Arena as such, which was on Rainsway in Derby. So this was a state-of-the-art facility, changing rooms, padded seats, your own locker. Like, wow, hydrotherapy stuff, hot tubs, 3G, 4G pitches. Wow, this is amazing. Like almost like on cue, walking me down into Steve McLaren's office, like sitting me down there. Yeah, we've put a bid in for you. This was at the end of the season. This was at the end of the season. And we're just waiting for Derby to come back. They've come back. They want £9 million for you. Fucking hell, £9 million. Bear in mind, I've just been relegated. He said, we've bid six. And at the moment, that's where we're not really going to look to go anymore. But you get yourself away with England and come back and we'll see where we're at. I was thinking, bloody hell, £6 million. It's a fucking lot of money, considering where I was a few years earlier.
And you're still on your £3 grand a week.
Yep. So go away with England. Didn't kick a ball. Massimo Macaroni played for Italy in the tournament. This is Italy's and the tournament's top scorer. Italy win the trophy. Guess who
rocks up at Middlesbrough?
£8 million. My move, my transfer. Devastated.
Did anybody speak to you from Middlesbrough on why?
They just said, yeah, I spoke to Steve McLaren and he just said they'd gone for another target, but sit firm.
We're still interested.
Transfer window closes. This is when the transfer windows are out at this time. And then, so I go into that new season with Derby. You can see, Derby, we're going to get back up. But, you know, there was obviously part of me that I'm watching, you know, Middlesbrough start of the season. I'm thinking, are they scoring? Got his Massimo Macaroni hit the ground running?
Yeah.
You know, is he doing that or not? And then, you know, we struggle straight away. I did okay. I scored, I think up until that January transfer window, I'd scored 8 goals, I think it was, up to the transfer window. So I hadn't set the world alight, but I was the only one that was really scoring in that team as well. So my name was still there. And it came towards the end of the transfer window and the club were, Middlesbrough were again wanting to sign me. Derby County, poor business, obviously, because I ended up signing for Middlesbrough. Both me and Chris signed for £3 million, the pair of us, in the January, because Derby needed the money. It unraveled massively. The financial state of the club, obviously, they're not in a position now, are they? But it unraveled very, very quickly after they got down. As soon as they realised they weren't going to get back up straight away, then panic button, everyone got sold. Danny Higginbottom got sold. Yeah. Poom got sold. Seth Johnson got sold previous. And then me and Chris went.
They put all the chips on getting back up straight away. Yeah.
And they narrowly avoided relegation. Mm. Yeah, so I went into Middlesbrough. Like, I'd gone from potentially, if I'd have played for England and done well, that move would have been mine.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'd have gone into Middlesbrough as a club record signing and my life and career might have, I know it's all coulda, shoulda, woulda, might have taken a different direction. I signed into Middlesbrough almost like a little bit of an afterthought, a little bit, on transfer deadline day, and they signed Michael Ricketts on the same day. And bear in mind, Michael Ricketts was probably, in stature at that time, bigger name than me. Played for England, Bolton, scored goals, Prem. But anyway.
You automatically feel like you were down on the pecking order coming into
a little bit, yeah. Something just didn't feel right about that Michael Ricketts transfer. Don't necessarily think it was needed. I mean, he didn't set the world alight at all, but I mean, I didn't, in all fairness. But so I went in, not really mentally, I could have at the start, because the first game was away at Liverpool and I was on the bench. Ricketts was playing. I was like, this is not how I envisaged it a few months ago.
See, this is where I'm going back to. When I know about this bid, I'm leaving England. I'm not playing anyway. I'm leaving England and I'm going to knock on the chairman's door at Derby and same as Marlon Harewood, but I'm going to shit on his desk. I'm going to do everything I can to make that move happen.
But you see where I was at as well. I was so flattered as well that they wanted to keep me. And I felt a little bit on my shoulders that I was part of that team that got relegated, that if they viewed me so highly, I needed to show that club that I could be the man to fire them back up into the top division.
So my next thing is, well, Derby, I want a new contract. So I'm on 3,000 minus 25%. So you're on 2,250 quid a week. You think I'm worth 9 million quid. I want paying as a £9 million player.
Have you ever thought about becoming an agent? You know, I'd have loved you to have been my agent at the time. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. If the club views me as a £6 to £9 million player, I was not being paid a £6 to £9 million
exactly.
Player.
Exactly.
Absolutely not.
And as your agent, I'm telling you to go in pre-season and kick every football as far as you can. Ruin the sessions. That might not be in your nature, but the amount of money that you're going to end up getting paid, you can be anything, can't you? You can be, if you want to be a prick, you can be a prick.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's times when I look back and reflect back that I wish possibly things were different in that side of things, definitely financially, because when they negotiated my Middlesbrough contract, Keith Lamb, who was the chief executive at the time, my agent came in and said, they've offered you less than you at Derby. I was like, that, I cannot, but you what? We talk about that first contract offer. They'd offered me, and I felt, I remember thinking, massively, massively insulted. And yeah, so we went in, me and Chris. So he was Chris's agent as well. So he ended up negotiating, I think, the same contract, me and Chris, which again, I thought that maybe Chris was a defender, I was an attacker. What's the hardest position to play in the teams? Probably centre forward. I probably would have thought that. We ended up signing the same contract. I knew that because obviously I spoke to Chris about that. So I ended up signing a contract at Borough for the first 6 months. So for the remainder of that season, signed in the January, that was be paid $5,000 a week for the first 6 months. And then after that, it would be $12,000 rising every year until I left, about £500 every year. I was content with that contract.
See, that's an incredible contract, but that's not a contract. You're not signing that contract if you're getting bought for £6-7 million as the record signing. You're probably double that.
At least. I would say I was, even at that level, I was probably one of the lowest paid players in that Middlesbrough dressing room.
Do you think?
Pretty sure.
With the move coming in January and Michael Ricketts being signed and everything at the same time, do you think you would have been a better player coming into Middlesbrough if it had, and it's probably an ego thing, if there had been that more of a fanfare and you were coming in as the £8 million signing, if you'd have got the contract, if you were you were coming in as a big signing?
The main man.
That's a tough question to answer because I didn't, but I think I would have loved that. Come on, where I've come from and where I've been, if I was signing as a record signing in a Premier League striker,
a big successful club at the club.
God.
And it's all ball tickling, isn't it?
But you know, look, that's why I said that was a moment where, for me, decisions, you know, and there were decisions out of my hand in many respects. You know, David Platt didn't pick me for England. I didn't play Macarena. You know, it was all these all little things that happened, you know, conspired for me not moving in that summer, but then affected me and my sort of mental side of things as well, going in there, feeling like I was playing a little bit of second fiddle to people. You know, you can imagine how I felt towards Macaroni a little bit, thinking, oh, you fucker, you know, you bastard, you shouldn't be here. It should be me. Do you know what I mean?
There's that,
you know, and I'm thinking Macaroni, I don't, what was he on? What was he? I don't know, 50, 60 grand a week. I don't know. Like, no idea. But I mean, we didn't really talk about them sort of things, but it would have been a lot more than I was on. So yes, when you say, oh yes, it was a good contract, but bear in mind at the end of that fourth year at Middlesbrough that I was not to earn another penny other than a few grand at Leeds when I had retired, that was to be the end of it.
This is what I mean. Do you know when you're at Derby, no matter how much you love the club and how many t-shirts your mum and dad have got and teddy bears, you've got to be as big a prick, as big an arsehole as you possibly can for that very situation. So after your four-year contract with all your injuries, if you'd have earned 40 grand a week for them 4 years, that's £10 million contract just north of, right? As opposed to a £2.5 million contract. So that's why, as a player, you've got to be as big an arsehole as you can, go into Derby, cause some fucking shit.
Can you imagine the injuries on the John Parkin briefcase? They didn't need to be reinforced. Like, just be sat there.
It would be a slam. But you know what I mean? I speak about this all the time, and people might think I'm a fucking arsehole for it, but you never know when your career's ending, and you're the perfect case example where you could have been set up for life from being an arsehole at Derby and saying, look, I want to go, I'm not going to play for you, fuck you, right? Whoever manager, Gregory, fuck you, you tan bastard. I'm off. Sell me or I'm going to ruin everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're the moments in your life that you sort of look back and reflect. Because you go back as well, like, I'd felt like I'd like earned myself at Derby and I'd earned the respect of the team and the fans and everything like that. And you think, well, you know, do they owe us some? No, they didn't. But then I remember me and Chris went into the Ram Arena to go and pick our boots up. So the club had agreed a fee. Yeah, it hadn't been... Obviously, we hadn't agreed personal terms, and they wouldn't let us in to get our boots. They would not let us in to get our boots. They were told, the guy was told, if Malcolm and Chris come in to get their boots, don't give them. I mean, what? Like the blood, sweat, and tears I'd given for that club, and I couldn't even go in. As we said, don't be absolutely ridiculous. We're coming in here. Oh well, there's some T's to be crossed and some I's to be dotted. It's not all sorted yet. So if they come in for the stuff, don't give them it. So
that reinforces my point even more.
I'm just like, you know, when you say, oh, I love the club, that situation left us out. You know what I mean? That shouldn't have been the case. It should have been, boys, you know what? Good luck. Yeah, thanks for the all help. You came in here, you cost us 50 grand or whatever, 100 grand. Yeah, you get giving you old Chris. Bloody hell, he'd come through the Ute. Chris was a Derby fan. Used to stand fucking at the baseball ground with his dad watching he was like Derby through and through. And we left like scratching our heads, getting up at the car, going up the road to Middlesbrough, thinking, well, what the fuck was that about?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Just it's like emphasising my case mental. Even more.
A quick message for our sponsor for this episode, gentlemen. You know who it is. Who is it?
You'll tell me.
NordVPN.
NordVPN, the best VPN service in the business.
By the way, my mate's getting in bother with it.
Why?
He lives in Spain, right? And he's watching like 6 games a weekend. His missus is going absolutely off her tits.
We were supposed to be getting away from this.
Yeah, we've moved out here, away from it all. And he's watching three games every Saturday, three games every Sunday.
On his VPN, says he's back in the UK and can watch it again.
Yeah, she's furious.
So if you don't know what VPN is, you can bounce your location from wherever you are in the world to wherever you need to be. If you want to watch a game, it's only been showing in the UK, and maybe you're off on your jollies in Cyprus. It's nice Cyprus, isn't it?
Yeah, I like
Cyprus. You can bounce back and watch the match, no problem. And that's not the only advantages of NordVPN.
It's the military style.
Military style.
Security. That's what we like.
Passwords, your bank details, anything you don't want anybody getting the grubby mitts on, you can use NordVPN to secure all your information.
But what I've told him to do is don't keep watching your football and just get rid of her, send her home. So I don't know how it's going to go down. I don't know how it's going to transpire. But he's saving money anyway, and he's so...
We've got an offer, Chris.
Oh, we've always got an offer. As always, all you've got to do is follow the link in the description, the NordVPN link, and get this, 4 months free.
How many?
4 months. 4 months free and a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't like it, it's not wicked for you. You've got 30 days to get your money back. Well, the link's in the description. Get yourself involved.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Loved. And how did you fit in the dressing room at Borough when you arrived?
Yeah, well, we touched on earlier, obviously, everything that I'd been through, I think that previous 6 months with the time at Derby had left me in a bit of state of anxiousness, I would say.
Yeah.
Bit stressed, bit like, oh, you know, things didn't happen, should have happened, having to fit in straight away, having to go into a team and perform immediately. I suffered with my mental health massively. I overthought a lot more than I should have done. And I started suffering from double vision, in all fairness. Driving the car, I used to drive, obviously, to the training ground and just didn't feel myself, not at all. Like, anyway, I played a game against Everton. I think it was the second or third game I played for Middlesbrough. Fucking seen two of the ball when I was running about. Don't feel right here at all. So I came off the pitch half time. I said, don't feel right here at all. Something's not right with me. So, right, okay. So came into the training ground on the Monday. Still suffering from it a bit. And they sent me to get an eye test. And they did me a brain scan. I was suffering from stress.
And it were having that effect on you?
Yeah. And yeah, anxiety, stress, depression, however you want to put it. I think I was a bit of everything coming over me. The fact that the club didn't really recognise that. And like I said, sent me for eye tests rather than going, you're all right. How are you feeling? Is this move? Is it just have a sit and talk to me? Which is probably what I needed. Fucking hell, I just ended up sort of battling my way through it as best I could.
Did you have that same level of confidence as when you arrived at Derby on the field?
No, not really, because...
You were playing without fear.
The standard was a lot more, it was a lot better. Training was a different intensity. The McLaren round sessions were a lot. And like, we go saying that I could have gone in there with the mindset of a champion, of a record signing. I went in there affected by the move, bit part feeling like I wasn't going in there at the right stage. And we did, in one of the first training sessions we did, we were in the indoor hall. McLaren set us up, end of the session. Everyone, get a ball, halfway line, right? There's a 9-a-side goal at the end. Everyone, ping the ball in. As long as you get the ball in the goal on the full, you can go in for your lunch. Everyone like, phew! I hit it, fucking hell, scuffed it. High over the bar. Do you know what? If that goal had been fucking five times the side, still wouldn't have hit it. And then it got left. There was me and McLaren left at the end. Bear in mind, McLaren had already hit it. Oof. And I was thinking, why have you done this to me? You know what I mean? I was thinking to me, why have you put me under this?
Mm. All the rest of the lads still waiting for you to do it.
They're on dessert.
They've gone. They're fucking gone. So, do you know what I mean? Like that, given that sort of instance about feeling a bit under pressure, a bit under stress. If we'd have done that at Derby a week ago, I'd have fucking hit it first time. I couldn't fucking hit the goal. High, wide, handsome. I just felt under immense pressure straight away.
You know, the scary Stranger. Thing is, and we're going to get to it, you feel like this before your injuries. You've had one injury mentally.
The thing that's strange about it is you know McLaren and McLaren knows you. You'd think that he'd sort of like, stop, what's wrong? Why can you not do that when I know for a fact you can do it?
I don't know, it was almost like it became a bit comical that I couldn't hit it. Do you know what I mean? And inside I was like, oh yeah, fucking, I can't, you know, but inside I was fucking cutting inside, you know, that cut me deep, that. Didn't feel myself at all. And you know what I mean? You go sort of through that stage, like I got in the team a bit, scored a few goals. And then two games before the end of the season, that's when my injury started. I tore my groin. And the last two games of the season. So feeling like that mentally, trying to adjust to the move, playing okay, getting in the team, scoring, then tearing my groin. But then the club wanted me to play the last two games because we'll sort it in the summer. You know, the old famous one, we'll get it sorted in the summer. Fucking, I can hardly move. Like, then I ended up getting, it was called, I don't know if you've heard of it, Gilmore's groin. A guy down in London had the injury named after him. So I went to see him. He operated on me, said it's one of the worst I've seen. Your groin's completely tore off the bone. I don't know how you've played. Fucking hell, I've played the last two games there. I was in agony. Fans didn't know. No one said anything.
Mm.
But again, you just expected to sort of play. And again, I wasn't feeling particularly well.
I always wonder, you know, I'm no physician by any stretch, but the stories that we hear, how much our bodies are connected and how much mental stress plays on your physical injuries at the same time. You know, if you're out of sorts, you're stressed. Because how many people are in that situation and then injuries come one after another?
I'd never had an injury at Derby either. Or throughout, from being 6 years old. So that was the first time that I'd ever had an injury or had to be really treated by a physio. And then I was playing. So what happened is I ended up doing my own kind of pre-season away from the club, the team, but ended up playing the first few games of the season, but probably 70%. Opening game of the season, not fit. We get a penalty. Job gets brought down in the box. Janino picks the ball up, thinking, fucking hell, you know, I'm feeling not 100% mentally, physically not right. Janino walks over to me. There you go. You take it. Fucking hell. This can go two ways, can't it?
Which way did it go?
Fucking missed. Van der Sar, remember, put the ball down, turn round. Van der Sar, fucking, Jesus Christ, he's fucking big unit, isn't he? Turn round, wasn't said I was on penalties before the game. Obviously, I think we played a little bit off the cuff with that. And I hit it, saved it. Oh my God, that penalty affected me. I don't think mentally that I, but from what I'd been feeling the previous few months, that I ever recovered from that. Like, I remember Gareth Southgate was in the team and I was thinking, he's going to come and say something to me. It's Gareth missed penalty in fucking
96.
It would come up to me. It didn't come up to me. I don't know whether he thought that just leaving me alone might be the best thing.
Yeah.
But fucking hell, I needed someone to put their arm around me and say, it's all right, Mal. It's all right. Don't worry about
thing
it.
The thing is, you never experienced this, had you? Because your career's been on such a trajectory from such a
I mean, you can see that the way the conversation's gone in terms of like where we're going here, do you know what I mean? Where you can almost feel the euphoria of it with the way that my ride went. And that having that penalty miss at that particular stage of my career and where I was at. So that was in the August, first game of the season, Fulham away. We ended up losing again, 3-2. fucking hell, shoulders were like a fucking weight on them. Then in and out of the team. There was a couple of glimpses in there. So I scored in the second round of the Carling Cup, the year that Borough won it. So I scored the winning goal in extra time against Brighton in the first round for the Borough. So that was a nice bright spot, something that the Borough fans will remember me for. Scored a couple of goals as well in the league. And then I ended up breaking my leg in the November 2003 in training, which was basically the end of my football career, really. That's, you know, from the euphoria of everything that I felt and experienced and the way that my career really should have gone from Middlesbrough. Bear in mind all these players that I played with England, under 21s, John Terry, Leddy King, Paul Robinson, Ashley Cole, Joe Cole, Carrick, Defoe, Crouch. Where have all them gone? I snapped my leg in a training ground fucking tackle. Fucking, and the fact that I was never the same player after that.
Can you remember the tackle?
Yeah.
Just one of them.
Yeah. It was with Chris Rickett as well.
We joined from Derby.
Yeah. Yeah, my mate from Derby. So we, it was attackers v defenders. Ball got played into me from the goalkeeper. I knocked it around the corner. The ball was there to be won. You know, I'm going in there. I'm thinking I'm going to just, I know in my head I'm getting there first. And Chris is coming to clear the ball. I thought, right, maybe a bit stupid because you know that you're probably going to get clattered. So I ended up just nicking the ball in front of him, chipping it over his leg. And he had committed to clearing the ball. Bang. Almost like a tree snap, the branch snapping straight away. I know 100% somebody's broke the leg, and I just remember that split second. Think, please don't be me, please don't be me. And I looked up and looked at my shin. I'm like, it's me. Like, can you believe it? And I was just like, oh fucking hell. Chris sort of looked down at his leg, realised, and then looked at mine, realised it was me. And I think any pain that Chris felt at that particular time had fucking washed away from him. Obviously, I was like fucking lying there in pain, grabbing boots of, it was either Mendy at Zenden or whatever, and just fucking holding their boots while I was like fucking laying there. Got a golf buggy thing type thing to come down, you know, where they carry the equipment on and stuff like that. Fucking got me on there, got me to the hospital. Obviously, I came back, they plaster casted it. They x-rayed it, but they weren't going to use that x-ray for the consultation to what they were going to do with it. Went back to the training ground, saw Chris. Chris was crying his eyes out. Fucking gutted. Everyone was like fucking in bit of a shock. You know, I'm sure there's been other instances of like leg breaks in training, but you know, I suppose it was just the fact that it was me and Chris as well. And you know, I didn't hold any malice towards him. I think one thing that I do reflect on, and you know, I don't really know. I mean, I'll say to you, and you tell me how you sort of take this. Massimo Macaroni, again, mentioned his name again, was going down too easily in matches. Italian, fucking hell, you know. So that actually the defenders have been told purposely to go in hard on the attackers during training. Obviously they were going in hard, but we're told, obviously as attackers, we weren't fucking told this. Chris only told me this afterwards. He said, Mal, he said, I would have never fucking gone in for that tackle. Mm. But we were told to fucking go in and hit the attackers hard.
To try and toughen Macaroni up.
Look, they didn't say go and fucking break someone's leg. And obviously I felt a little bit probably for Chris in that respect, that, you know, he'd been left in a position where, you know, that ball maybe in a normal training session, he'd have fucking just let me get it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And like, so I don't know what, you know, I've just told, what's your fucking instances of that? I mean,
I don't think it's up to the coaching staff to say that. I think the lads.
Or the coach and manager, Paul Macaroni, to, you know, to toughen up, yeah. You know.
Well, this instance, I think Man United had that Ronaldo, didn't they? I mean, Walt Smith, I think, famously said that, like, we kicked Ronaldo in training, didn't we? So then, like, when he played the matches, he was like sort of match toughened. I don't know whether there was an element of that went into it a little bit. And they just wanted him to sort of experience what it was like to be kicked in training. And then, but I don't know, it left me in a position where I understood, you know, there's no malice at all with Chris. I mean, we got on and we still, you know, get on great. There's no issues there at all. It just left a little bit like thinking, you know, that little bit of, oh, should it have really happened?
Well, they need.
A little bit of that, because that wasn't Chris's game. Chris didn't go around fouling people and stuff. And I just think that maybe if I hadn't have been told that my life might have been a bit different from that point onwards. But the fact that I never got back and became the same player was due to other instances other than that moment. It was to do with medical advice.
Because I was going to say, when you first saw the consultant, did he say that The chances, I mean, you might make it back, but the chances are you're not going to be the same player. Or was it just,
Granny,
it was you'll get your back.
Granny, it was a simple leg break.
Yeah, I was thinking.
It was a very, very simple break of my tibia. Yeah, the fibula wasn't broken. Yeah, I had a shin indentation because the bone had displaced slightly. And straight away when I saw that, I think, well, it needs operating on because it needs to be put straight. Long. You need pin. It needs pinning in position. We see the consultant and he said, like, oh, yeah, we'll treat it in plaster casts, basically. No operation. Fucking hell, right, okay. So, again, for me, green, naive me, what am I going to do? Trust the people that are around me?
To be fair, mate, I think anybody would do that.
Trust yeah. the
professional. I don't consultant in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that left me a little bit uneasy was saying, well, you know, I've just treated a rugby player, an amateur rugby player, and he's had the same break, and we've done this and this, and I was thinking, okay, but like
Premier League footballer.
Yeah. So like, I'm not like, don't compare apples with oranges in some respects. So anyway, so originally when I broke my leg, I was like, right, when am I coming back? Fucking, when I can come back, it's 12, 16 weeks, however, whatever. Oh yeah, we were doing well like that. So then straight away, right, full leg past, full fucking leg past, not bottom, full leg cast, right up to me groin, no movement, right past me ankle. You're going to be in that for 6 weeks. Fucking 6 weeks. Oh my God, 6 weeks in a full fucking leg. So 6 weeks in that, yeah, then what? Okay, then we're going to take the full leg off. We're going to put one up the top, one at the bottom with a knee hinge. Okay, no problem. Then what are you going to do? Right, then we're just going to have the bottom one. Okay, so three. So fucking adding up the weeks. I think, fucking hell. One thing I was uncomfortable with, I said, bear in mind, the fucking bone's not straight. Oh, yeah. Well, what we do, we get a saw. Yeah, we saw a little hole in the back of your plaster cast and we'll hammer some wooden wedges in the back of it so it aligns the bone and it aligns the cast at the bottom.
Hell,
fucking hell, that's not
leveling a leg, not a shed.
Fucking Pinocchio.
That don't sound right. So I was straight away, I was thinking, nah, this don't sound right. Anyway, fucking, all right, yeah, okay. That's what we're doing.
What's the physio saying at this point? Is he just agreeing?
Yeah, he'd not experienced a leg break for number of years. So again, I think the physio put his hands in this consultant that we were seeing. You know, there was no second opinion. There was no, well, bear in mind, fucking hell, you're going to do all this. If it don't heal straight or don't this or don't that, then, you know, you might need to get it operated on and stuff like that. So you imagine, obviously, by the time already, I'm fucking mentally gone, really, already, before my injury, a little bit suffering. So straight away, this injury, like, can't play, can't do this, can't do that. Going through that, coming out of that. But when all this is going on, like Middlesbrough are fucking really successful. Got to the final of the Carling Cup, all when I'm in my leg plast, watching what I joined Middlesbrough for to be successful, to be part of a winning team. Like suddenly to have to watch that while I'm injured was
mind blowing.
Wow. Incredibly, incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult. And I remember when they finally took this cast off my upper thigh, they took it off and I looked at it and I was like, I got no fucking muscle. It wasted away. I remember lifting my leg up and all I saw was like my bone and then the muscle just all soft and all squidgy all on the side of it. Exactly the same for my calf. I was thinking, what the fuck they done to my leg here? Go through all that. Whilst I'm out, Andrew Davies, centre half, snaps his leg in a reserve match, I think, against Blackburn Rovers, I think. So I was like, oh my God, fuck it, Dava. Oh, he's going to have to go through all this, bastard. Like I've just been through. Poor lad. Anyway, next day goes in for an operation. Bear in mind, they've obviously seen what I've been through with my leg, all these fucking plaster casts, these appointments that I've been through, all these wedges that I've had. Oh, fucking hell, that hurts. Like that. You know, trying to wedge all these in. I've had like probably about 15 visits here, wedging, x-ray wedge. Oh, we need a bit more. Oh no, leave it on an extra week. So, obviously, the middle of the videos have been all through all this thinking, I know what they would have been thinking at the time.
What was the time frame? Where are you now?
So break my leg in the November. So obviously December, January, February. So there was about 3 months. And then Dava broke his leg, I think, in the March, I think.
And you're still in shitloads of pain.
I mean, yeah. So what happened with me is he went in and he had his operation the day after. Come out and he was back at the training ground the next day. And I was thinking, well, what the fucking hell can I have done that? I've just spent like how many weeks? 10 weeks at home, bed rest, fucking getting bed sores in my ass because I couldn't get up and couldn't move about. Like, I couldn't get a shower. How did I wash? Like, my mum had to come and live with me. Like, I was so like,
basically,
I was like a baby again. I was like a baby. Like a newborn baby. Like, I had to be, like, mum had to help me wash. Like, my brother had to go out and get me clothes. I was just a fucking nightmare. Like, and obviously, I was in the training ground, and Dava came in the next day on his crutches. All the, oh, right. Oh, okay.
You're still.
And I'm, well, what happened with me is I came out of my legs, and my legs were just like looking, they weren't the same. My calf wasn't the same, my thigh wasn't the same. Straight away, working on some weights and stuff like that. But when I started walking and putting weight through it, I was thinking, this hurts. This fucking, and it wasn't a little pain, it was a sharp pain. Is this normal?
Every step.
Every step. Every time I put my foot down, I felt pain.
But you weight on it.
Yeah. So I said to Grant, I said, something's not right here. You'll always feel it. You'll always feel it, no matter what. Maybe a change in temperature in the winter. Like, I was hearing all this. Oh, really? Oh, well, that's, well, it'll go away then. It fucking didn't go away. So when ended up like doing a little bit of a rehab fitness wise, and Dava, even though he broke his leg 4 or 5 months after me, we did our rehab together.
So, same sessions.
Same sessions. So good in some respects, good, because I had someone to do me rehab with. Could bounce off Dava, as you know, he's a good lad and stuff. We had a laugh. And I remember we ran. I went, Dava, did your leg hurt when you put your foot down where you broke? No. I was like, fucking hell, mine does. What do you mean? I said, every time I put any weight through it, it hurts. No, doesn't hurt at all. So again, told them, no, you're all right. You're all right. I went to see Grant. I said, I'm struggling, really struggling. Right, I'm going to prescribe you some painkillers. So they prescribed me some cocodamol to take the edge off the pain. Did. I remember in the team meetings, I was fucking dizzy as fuck. Spaced out before team meetings. Because you're supposed to eat them with food. So I was taking these painkillers. It was taking the edge off it. Still feel it, taking the edge off it. So get back in first team contention. Still not right. Away, UEFA Cup, Banik Ostrava away. I'm sub. I come on the last 10 minutes. We end up winning. James Morrison scores a goal in injury time. We drew 1-1. So I played in the UEFA Cup. I'm thinking, oh, fucking played in Europe. Woo. Great. Come back. Anyway. So the next match is a reserve match against Manchester United at the Riverside. Playing that, going for a block tackle. You know what it's like, block tackle at the best of times. Boom. Anyway, I came off because from that pain, suddenly it was fucking, that was a bit of a sharper pain now. Physio came off. He went, bloody hell, what a good test for your leg that was, son.
A good test.
Good test for your leg that, son. Anyway, I went, still fucking hurting. Bear in mind, this is probably 5 to 6 months trying to get myself fit in agony. Manchester United away at Old Trafford, first team. I'm in the squad. I was like, I can't go. Something inside of me said, don't go. I went to the physio. I said, Grant, I cannot do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. I need someone to look at my leg.
Someone else to look at your leg.
Someone else. I need a second opinion on my leg. Something's not right. You know what the physio's like? Physio's job normally is to report back to the manager and go, right, he's not fit for the weekend. I battered his head that much about my leg. He went, oh, you need to go and see McLaren. Me? Isn't it? All right, yeah, you do. Anyway, so fucking go and see McLaren. Steve, I said, something's not right with my leg, mate. And I know you've picked me. I said, I need to get myself checked out. I'm not right. He said, right, we'll go and get a scan of it. We'll go and get a CT scan, proper scan of the bone. Let's have a look at it and see what's going on. I was like, why can't the physio say that? Do you know what I mean? Let's like, come on. It's like, not hard. Anyway, so.
Not like they're at a League Two club where honestly, the scan's like, oh,
anyway, so they go off to Man United. I go to hospital, get a CT scan, comes in. He said, you've got a stress fracture on your leg. He went, just so I know, he said, you've not been playing and training on it, have you? I went, not been training. I said, I've played 5 reserve games. I've played UEFA Cup match and I've just played 80 minutes for the reserves. And I told him about that block tackle. He went, fucking hell. He said, your leg could have fucking snapped in half. I'd been playing and training the whole time with a broken leg. The whole time.
Okay, now.
It never, ever healed. So all that time I was out injured and all that time that I was muddling through the sessions, all that time I had a broken leg. And do you know what? I suppose at that point, what would have been helpful for me where I was feeling was an apology. I didn't get one. I never got an apology and that hurt tremendously. And it still hurts to this day that there was never Mal, do you know what? Sorry, got that wrong. And do you know what? Getting that decision wrong affected everything. So you can imagine when I'm training and playing on a broken leg, what is, and I'm limping, basically a disguised limp as such. What's all that doing to my left-hand side? Because I think of the stresses and strains that's putting through my left-hand side. So I have the operation. It needs operating on. You need a pin in there, stabilize the bone, lock it in top and bottom with a screw. And hopefully we'll have you playing in 2 months or whatever. Went in for the operation. I got back, they ended up doing all that, again, worked on fitness. And do you know what? I ran and there was no pain. And it was fucking, thank God for that, finally. No pain there. Like, I'd had a year of like agony with it. Then, as I was running more and more, suddenly I got myself back into the first team. So I'd worked myself so hard and so through everything. And I played, he brought me back into the team. And I played one game against Blackburn Rovers. And as I went down to chase the keeper, I went in and chased the keeper down and I pushed off with my left foot. Oh, fucking hell. Ooh, that's fucking hurts. Straight away, I was like, every time I put my foot down, I felt a similar pain and I felt my leg. And I came off the pitch, they x-rayed it, and I'd got a stress fracture in my foot.
Is this your left leg?
Because there. I'd been putting every bit of weight and stresses through my left foot, I'd developed a stress fracture in the outside of my left foot. I'd need to be operated on. Jesus. So I had a pin in my foot, kept me out again for a while. I then came back from that, got into training, and the metal pin, they hadn't knocked it down. So every time I ran, the pin flicked over my tendon on my knee. So it caused me incredible pain when I ran. The more I ran on it, it ended up flicking over my knee. So he x-rayed it. He said, the pin needs to come out. So they had to take the metal work out of my leg. So they took the metal work out of my leg and they took the metal work out of my foot as well. So then I was obviously metal free. So fucking hell, it's incredibly difficult telling this because it's like fucking painful. Then I got myself fit again. So instead of them going, okay, right, your body's been through fucking bit shit there. Let's just relax. Let's just bring you back time. So what did they do? They fucking battered my foot. They ended up putting weight vest on me, ended up going up and down the stairs at Rockcliffe. You know, while everyone's going up and down for the lunch, there was me on my weighted vest, up and down the stairs and weighted vest, walking round Rockcliffe Hall, the old site, weighted vest on, box jumps, box steps. I fucking did that much. I refractured my foot. I ended up refracturing my foot.
Surely a stress fracture is exactly that. You're putting too much stress through it. So why?
Well, I don't know. I trusted these guys to be doing the right thing for me. And I also developed, because my feet, I wasn't on my feet enough and my plaster cast was tight on my foot. I also developed Morton's neuroma underneath my feet, which is a neural problem when your nerves get pinched together under your feet. So when I had my metal workout, I also had the nerves removed under my feet as well.
You know what I was thinking when you were saying before the first spell out and you were going to him saying, I'm in pain. He'll have thought you were a soft fucker.
Yeah,
exactly.
He'll have thought, fucking mentally weak.
Exactly.
Soft.
Yeah, exactly, Brownie. And that's exactly what I took from that. And I kind of had that vibe that, he doesn't fancy going through the pain.
And you going to see him before the Man U games, him going,
yeah,
what, go and tell him yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you question yourself as well? Am I soft? I mean, soft here.
Well, you know your own body, and I knew exactly where I broke my leg, and I knew that was a sharp pain. It wasn't like a dull ache or something that I felt was. It never went away. Never from the day I broke it from a couple of years later. Yeah. It never went away.
That duty of care is to listen to your patient, if you will. Yeah. Who you're a physio for, and act on it.
So literally the whole of my time, I only was fit for the last like. Probably 9 months of my Middlesbrough, but my body, I've been out of football for so long. I'd missed, by this stage, I know I've almost fast forwarding in time there. You're talking probably 3 years of going through that. From then suddenly everybody wanted me when I was kind of fit to be the same player, but my body was just not the same. I was built on speed. I'd lost half a yard. I wasn't the same player anymore. You know, Steve McLaren left. He went to be the England manager. And then obviously Gareth Southgate took over. And God bless Gareth. Obviously, he just saw me as an injured player. I'd spent so much time with Gareth in the physio room as well, because he was an injured footballer as well, quite a lot towards the end of his career. I spent so much time rehabbing with him. So he didn't really see me as a fresh signing or something. He just saw me as a stigmatized, injured player.
Have you got any grounds for a legal case for this? Or have you looked into it?
I don't know. Parker, I just sort of, you know, I went through so much shite with regards to my treatment that, you know, the way that my body adjusted and the way that my body changed and altered, the gait that I used to run at, you know, the way that my body would run, the way that I put my feet down, everything from that changed. Even to this day, this leg's not bigger than that leg. Yeah, it's everything changed for me and my body. And it also culminated in obviously when I did retire, I left Middlesbrough in the June 2007. I ended up finishing my football career at Leeds and I fractured my back. And I know that that was all related. You know, the stresses and strains that I'd put on my body throughout being out injured and throughout that I'd put on being in plaster casts and everything, all the stresses and strains that I'd put on, and I fractured my back in training at Leeds United, which finished me off in January 2009. I just don't think they knew what to do with me. Honestly, I just got that vibe that, like, I was a long-term injured player, and I just don't know. They knew that they'd made the wrong decision by not operating on me, and then it was like a dominoes effect. Like, and once it gone, it was out of hand. Like, and there was no grabbing that. Once that domino's gone, you can't get it back.
Well, it sounds like you're like more of a guinea pig. It's like you're like a fucking patchwork quilt. We'll try a bit of this. We'll try a bit of that.
Then you come back from that. The fans expect you to be. Mm. Oh well, we signed it. Like, and they expect you to be, you know, the same. And you know, I've managed to probably put this right, because I know I hadn't. You know, I left Middlesbrough. Everyone was injury prone. Oh, this, that, and the other. You know, yes, I had my injuries, but like, hopefully when people hear this, they'll realise that from a simple leg break, in my opinion, that should have just been treated with an operation, and I would have been back within 3 months, possibly 4 months, and I could have looked ahead for my whole career and had a successful time at Middlesbrough in the glory years. I missed out on all that.
Mm.
And I had to sit by as a passenger and watch Viduka come in, Hasselbank, Yakubu, all these guys do what I should have been doing, and I couldn't do it, and I had to sit from the sidelines and watch, you know, even the Carling Cup final. Yeah, I was in the stand with the supporters watching the game. Wasn't even part of the team. Wasn't even part of the celebrations. They had me up in the stand. You know, as an injured player, when you're in, you want to feel part of the team, don't you?
Yeah,
that they're so desperate to feel part of the team. And for me not to be part of the Carling Cup squad, or the experience of it, of winning something, not to be out there, to be shoved up in the crowd with the rest of the supporters. Horrible. To see, you know, your teammates there on the pitch. You know,
I scored
in the early rounds. So look, I'm not pining for a medal or anything like that, which I didn't get. But, you know, it would have been nice just to feel that you were part of something, you know, be along with the team, travel along, we spend some time, go in the dressing room to be able to share the experience with the... Come on, that's not too much to ask, is it? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Rather than being up in the stand, watching, having to applaud the team. That was tough to take.
We've had lads on who've battled with injuries for, say, 2-3 years. And when they do get back, they see it as they've been given a second chance and they can finish the career just for the love of the game. But if I put myself in your situation, I think I'd be frustrated that I wasn't the same player, yeah.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was bitter, because I left Middlesbrough and ultimately ended up in League One with Leeds United. But I found myself, from my Middlesbrough contract, which I was being paid a decent amount of money, as we know, suddenly from the June 2007, from when I retired in January 2009, I earned a total of $5,000. I played 5 times for Leeds and I got $1,000 in appearance. That's the amount of money I earned. I couldn't get a club. No one wanted to touch me.
Do you have insurance?
They didn't pay out. They said that I had a degenerative back condition.
See, I think if I'm in your situation, mate, I'm as bitter as they come.
Yeah, and that's, you can understand, people say to me, like, and they say, how did you fall out of love with football? Hopefully, you know, so you've got my book coming out, read my book and you understand why I kind of got a little bit bitter with regards to football and stuff, and some of the experiences that, you know, I got my injury in 2009 November 2003 and I left as an injured player in January 2009. That's a long time.
Mm.
That's a bloody long time to be fighting yourself, your body, your head.
You know,
awful long time.
When you left Middlesbrough, because you must have known that the contract wouldn't be, you wouldn't get a new contract.
That's right, yeah.
Where are you at mentally? Are you thinking, right, I can get back, I can go again, or?
I was thinking I was a Premier League player in my head. I never wanted to lose that. Like, I'd left Derby to be a Premier League player. I'd got myself fit towards the end of my time at Middlesbrough and still thought in my head I was a Premier League player. Obviously, people didn't look at me and think that. They thought that you needed to step down or whatever. But no one was going to offer me a contract. That's where the problem was. Nobody wanted to offer me a contract. And then when the phone rings and they tell me that Hull City want to take me on trial, but it actually turned out that they didn't really want to take me on trial. It was my agent trying to find a club who would fucking entertain me. You go to Hull and like I was training with the reserves and the youth team. Like Brownie had me training with the youth team. I was like, my God, what's happened to me here? Like, I'm sort of semi-fit, although I don't feel like the same. I'm not as quick as I was. Can't really get around the pitch like I used to. My game's all about movement. I'm on trial. He doesn't really fancy us because if he did, I'd be training with the first team. There was other stuff. You have to read the book. There was millions of stuff that happened at the Hull that left me in a position where I basically left. Like, I needed to get out of there because like, I was like, yeah, there was a lot of things happened with Phil at Hull that left me in a position where it was an awful, awful experience. And I ended up then at Leeds United with Dennis Wise, Gus Poyet were there. Dennis was really good with me. And like, he said, right, we'll do a playing reserve match, contract set up, grand a match. And he said, right, we'll sign that on the in the afternoon. We'll play the reserve game and then we'll get you around the first team. Brilliant. We did a crossing and finishing session on the morning, played the ball into me. I twisted, bang, fell on the floor, tried to get up. I went in, physios looked at me and I broke my back. I broke my vertebrae. The morning of the afternoon, I was due to sign my Leeds contract. You know what I mean? And from what I'd been through, bear in mind previous things, and I know, you know, maybe I did have a weakness in me, but I don't know. Maybe it was a culmination of all the time, the months and months and months I'd spent in crutches, or the stresses and strains that my body was being put under because I just wasn't running like I used to before. By that stage, I was like, is that it? Is that the end of me? And I was like, I didn't want my career to be finished with an injury.
Like, are you not getting paid?
No.
Coming back? Have you signed a contract?
No, I hadn't. I've signed the contract in the afternoon. Bear in mind, it was basically wouldn't have been worth the pay as you play anyway, because it was pay as you play. So it's not like I was having a 50 grand a week contract there that I didn't sign.
So getting back from this injury then, you're not getting paid?
No. So every day, Leeds were great to me. They stood by me, like let me go in every day. And I was just so desperately trying to get myself fit. I'd worked so hard for months and months and months, probably about 11 months, getting myself in a position where I was fit again. Then Dennis Wise gets sacked. Gary McAllister took over and he was very similar to Dennis. He played the game, you know, knew me, nice guy, had a conversation with me. He said, Matt, I'm quite happy to be in here, you know, use the facilities, get yourself fit and we'll just take it as it is. I worked so hard. I got myself back training with the lads. You know, you're talking about, Jermaine Beckford. It was a good, you know, Becchio. It was that Leeds United team that was like, ended up getting promoted, I think the following season. But so really, really good lads. I really enjoyed the dressing room. It was good finally that I could experience a little bit of that I'd missed for so long. And then I played a couple of reserve games and then we played Northampton away in the FA Cup and he fucking picked me. Like, I can't believe it. Me and Beckford were up front. We ended up winning 5-2. And I was like, I wasn't the same player. Not at all. Like, but mentally, I'd tick that box. I've got fit and I'm playing again. Mm. And for me, that was probably everything that I needed. Then I played two more games and then Gary McAllister got sacked as well. So the two managers that wanted to give me a chance both got sacked. Then Simon Grayson took over. And I was in a position where straight away, he didn't fancy me.
Mm.
What had happened to the previous two managers? You know, a new manager comes in. What does he want to do? Wants to change things. He can't just have. And for me, what was I? Very easy target. Wasn't on a contract. Pay as you play. So I caught a clock that straight away that he didn't fancy me. And I'd played a couple of games. I'd scored as well. So I'm immensely proud that I'd scored away at Stockport. We ended up winning 3-1. I came off the bench, I think about half an hour to go. Scored my last ever professional goal for Leeds United, which was fantastic. Celebrating in front of the Leeds. These travelling fans were fucking incredible. Like celebrating in front of them, brilliant. Next game, Peterborough United at home. I turn up to the ground, puts the squad up, announces the squad. I'm not in the squad. Bear in mind, like I'm only getting paid here. I've trained all week, been, you know, playing pretty regular, not in the squad. I went into the bar area, saw a couple of the other lads who weren't in the squad. I said, fucking hell, it's a bit harsh, isn't it? Why didn't he tell you before? Like, you probably wouldn't have come, would you? Or why didn't he tell you throughout the week? At least you would have known. He's like, got me there, sat there in front of everyone. I'm not in the squad. So I was like, oh. And then players would go, oh, go home. Just get yourself. I said, no, I'm staying. So I went, I said, I'm going to go back down to the changing room. I'm going to wish the lads the best. Anyway, so I walk from the players' lounge back to the thing. And I hear Grayson's voice, a clock. And he goes, I tell you what, I don't fucking care if he's disappointed. I'm not fucking picking him. I don't fucking care if he's getting paid your play. And I was like, I was just about to walk around the corner. He was like, fucking hear his voice here. And that was it. I was done. I retired in that split second. That was it. You're got in the car. I went home and I said, I'm retired. Done. Finish. I couldn't go anymore. I'd been through so much in them last few years and so much in that last year at Leeds that I needed something to tell me that I was done. And that was a moment.
Came to that being wanted again. The Middlesbrough thing of not really feeling wanted. And then actually hearing the words that you weren't wanted.
I heard it from myself. In some respects, I'm glad I needed, I'm not saying I'm glad. I suppose I did need that moment in my head to say that, Malcolm, you're not the same player. You're never going to be the same player. You're not wanted. I've the stigma attached to me. Where am I going to go from here? Who's going to offer me a contract? I've left Leeds now. They don't want me. And I've gone. I've just fucking gone mentally. Gone. I just went home and I said, I'm done. I retired. And do you know what? Like retired and... I think Leeds put out something that said, oh, Malcolm Christie has left the club by mutual consent or something. And I put that right mind straight away. I went, can I just say it's not by mutual consent? I've left the club on my terms. It's my decision to leave. I think that was important, you know, not to leave where people thought that it was almost, it was my decision. Yeah. And I'm so glad I left on them terms. That was the sort of sorry, painful end of my football career. It sort of was over in a flash like that.
It's hard because you got that little bit of love from Wise and McAllister, didn't you? That probably kept you clinging on. You know, maybe there is one last throw of the dice. Somebody's going to give us the belief and the chance. And then in the end, it was just, you were just a number, weren't you? To Simon Grayson.
Yeah. He didn't. So look, you know, it was his prerogative to do whatever he wanted. Yeah. He didn't know my story. He didn't know what I'd been through. Yeah, he might listen to this or he might hear extracts of stuff and think, oh shit, well, didn't realise he went through so much fucking mental torture and whatever. But, you know, he did what was right for him as a manager with his team. He didn't think I was going to be part of it, which was okay with him. But obviously for me, what I needed was, as you said, that arm round, we're going to support you. Or, you know, just for him just to leave me out without saying a thing and then to hear that was it.
It was the party that was relieved.
Yeah.
Driving away.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Big part of me that was relieved. Because I had no more to give. Took so much, honestly, from breaking my back in that training session at Leeds to actually play for Leeds. Took everything out of me. Everything. Like, and not to get paid and to do it day in, day out, turn up at the training ground. It softens the blow a bit when you're doing it at a Borough, when you're earning X amount a week. You know what I mean? Like softens the blow a little bit. You're doing that when you're not getting paid a penny.
But to go through that and then hear those words, like you said, I can understand.
Yeah,
why
there was a mixed emotions, of course.
Point.
Yeah, heartbreaking as well, but a relief that, I don't know, it was like I was looking for something. Do you know what I mean? I was looking for that fucking maybe get out of jail card where I could say, I'm not enjoying this anymore. And that's so hard because from 6 years old, football was everything for me. And it's still, it is now. I've gone sort of full circle with things. And to fall out of love with football and don't associate myself with football, how I ended up my career and how I ended up, so hard for me to see myself at 29 being in the position that I was with football, which was hating it. The highs that it gave me was somebody else's highs. It wasn't me. It felt like it wasn't me that did that. Them times that I'd had and the memories that with me, I'd forgot about them. That was somebody else. That was Malcolm Christie, the footballer. That suddenly wasn't Malcolm Christie who retired, that had sort of held a little bit of resentment for what I'd been through. Incredibly, incredibly hard transition to make from falling out of love, losing your identity and having to reinvent yourself with the ghost of the footballer around you all the time.
Especially someone who seemed to be so in love with the poetry of football as well, you know, going into the club shop and buying the shirt and buying into it.
And I was such a massive football, and to lose that as well, like, and I lost that for probably 7 years. Didn't watch football for 7 years after I retired.
What did you turn to then? Where did you get your strength from? If you took away from football, what did you...
I just had to lie low and just lose that ghost of Malcolm Christie, the footballer. It took me 3 years, I think, to sort of do nothing with myself. Hope that I don't get recognised in the street somewhere. Somebody asked me what I'm playing for. Am I retired? I retired. I never did a... It wasn't on Sky Sports fucking breaking news, was it? You know, Malcolm Christie's retired from football. Don't give a shit. In some respects, I suppose I wanted that to happen so people would know, so people bumping into me in the streets would be like, what are you doing? Oh, no, I'm not doing anything. Oh, you retired? Oh, when did that... You know, the same stories you're telling about your injuries, you end up telling about, I'm not doing anything because I never got the opportunity to say that. So, yeah, I just lied low for a few years.
You feel like the book hadn't closed officially? Because you've got this little statement from Leeds United and like you said, all those highs, your football career, everything you'd done, that rise, and all of a sudden you'd walked away from Leeds and what, like nothing?
There was no symbolisation of something ending in a new chapter. So that's why it was hard for me to... At the time, I had my two young boys came along. So I became a stay-at-home dad, really. It wasn't like I was doing nothing. So I became a stay-at-home dad. But at some respects, I was like, you come to the third year and you think, I just need to get out of the house. I can't have this affect me forever. Like, it's affected me throughout my football career. It's affected me now I've retired. I just can't have it. So I ended up in the motor industry. I don't know how, why. I ended up writing a letter to everyone round me, dealer principals, please can I have a job? Simple as that. I've done it before at the supermarket when I wrote to all the supermarkets back in the day asking for a part-time job. I did it again. Someone gave me a chance and I ended up, my career went and my life went down a different path away from football. In the motor industry, working as a car salesman, doing fairly well with it. Didn't really enjoy what I was doing, in all fairness. No, nothing will ever give you the highs of what I achieved and the relative lows. So in some respects, it was nice to go on a little journey, which was not many bumps. I didn't love it. It wasn't my passion. Staying in it for a number of years made me reflect as my boys go older. You know, boys start asking, your dad, were you a footballer once? Fucking, their dad played in the Premier League. Yeah, I was. Oh, tell me about that then. So I was a kid, my dad, you know, I loved my dad immensely. My dad was a printer by trade. My dad played in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? I'd want my dad to be proud and show me stuff. And like, they started kicking a ball about and I started playing football with them in the back garden. They joined a football team and that was it. The you know, that little light just flickering inside of me, taking them to training, like wanting to take training sessions, seeing them kick a ball about. And I'm like, it just took me back to that seven-year-old Malcolm Christie, the normal kid who had the love for football. Forget about that side of things. But football gave me so much. I achieved my dream, my lifelong ambition of doing what I did, you know, scoring at Old Trafford and things like that, that I didn't want a bad experience for the boys, my boys growing up, to have that hanker over them as well and anchor them down and think, well, my dad doesn't talk about his football.
Yeah.
Why doesn't my dad talk about his football? Is he not... Why is he and my dad not proud? I'm proud of him. Why? And it's gradually going to the sessions, taking them to football, taking them to matches. God, never been to a football match. Suddenly I was going to St. James's Park, the Riverside. I went to Hull City. I wanted to go everywhere. I wanted to take them to matches. And it ignited that passion inside of me, realised what I wanted to do in my life moving forward, which wasn't in the car industry. It was to use the experiences that I've had in my life, the highs, the lows. And once the rediscovery of the football was there and I could watch it, and I could watch it easy, I could look back at myself. I visited my mum and dad. Mum and dad have encyclopedias of me, these paper clippings that I mentioned earlier. God, I could look at them now. Mm. You know, look at the picture of when I signed for Derby and they took me back to Summerfield Supermarket. And I was putting the tin of beans on the shelf while the Sun newspaper were taking a photo of me in the shelves. Like, I look back and think, what the fuck was I doing?
Hell working the dairy bit.
Yeah, exactly. I remember thinking at the time, I remember saying, I don't put the milk out, I don't do the beans. So, you know, looking back and the comical things and the stories and everything that sort of brought back to me, I want to be that person again, somewhere, an amalgamation of that person and not be defined by that.
Can look at it
6 years, which it did. Again. 6 and 8, or, you know, 14 years. I need that man back. That man's got to come back.
Mm.
And, you know, through hard work, my wife, who I met in 2014, you know, go from the pit of despair when we kind of met, which I was going through, to be the person that I am now. She's been by me and supported me through all of that. You know, we've got a son together who's 4 years old, and, you know, maybe his journey, you know, I'm trying to just help, you know, whether it's through coaching, mentoring. I don't want my story to be like, oh, you know, because it is, my story does get quite deep and down and things like that. But I don't want, you know, people who sort of see my story as like, I've rediscovered my love for football. Yeah. And it's what I needed in my life for the next, well, however many years I'm on this planet. You know, I'm glad that I've come out the other side of it positively.
It sounds like you've led that phoenix from the ashes kind of twice. Within your football career, from Sunday League to Premier League,
yeah,
to falling out of it and seeming like you're in a place now where there's going to be some positive aspects from it.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I'd love to be a coach in a professional environment again. That's my ambition and my aim. I'd like to be a manager. You know, obviously, I've been out of football for a number of years, but... you know, I don't know where my journey... I mean, I look at 19 years old, would you just say I'll play in the Premier League in a couple of years' time? Absolutely not. So you just don't know where your journey's... You just don't know. All I know is I'm focused on what I'm doing at the moment, which is coaching young kids in terms of, you know, developing their own football journeys. And if that leads to opportunities in the professional game as well, where I can, you know, help people and players, you know, with some of the experiences that I've had in my unique journey from relative obscurity to representing, you know, my country and playing the Premier League and stuff, you know, hopefully people can relate to that in some way.
And you've got a book out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's been somewhat of a cathartic experience to do that. You know, as you've probably understood now from my story, it's been important for me to tell some of the tales of my past that I've been able to tell. It goes deep inside of, you know, my journey and how we've sort of experienced there. But it also touches on my sort of personal life as well, family life, which we haven't really touched on in terms of speaking here, which obviously, you know, some issues, you know, going on through there. But just follows a linear path throughout my life. You know, my life's pretty much gone full circle. There hasn't been anybody that's had my journey from never being at a professional academy or signed to a team as a kid, to go straight from non-league to making their professional debut in the Premier League and to represent their country as well. No one's ever done it before. So, and I don't think anyone will ever do it ever again, the way that football is nowadays.
When's the book out?
So the book's out on the 29th of June. Pre-orders, obviously, depending on when this,
it'll be out by the time this comes out in the
this podcast is released.
So you can go and get it now.
So yeah, so it'll be...
Yeah, go and get it.
So it'll be out now. And I just hope that, you know, I'm not, you know, Michael Owen, David Beckham, Steven Gerrard, Peter Crouch, all these guys that you see their autobiographies of, you know, I've had the chance and opportunity to read their stories and stuff. I just hope that mine doesn't just appeal to the fans and of the clubs that I played for, you know, Derby, Middlesbrough and Leeds, but appeals to just everybody on a general level as well.
I'd like to think that there's definitely still a place for you in the professional football, because I think if I wanted a mentor for some lads that were 100%. Coming back from injury at this point, I don't think there'd be many better men to look at.
That's... I spoke to the publisher about that. I said, well, it does leave the door open for the next journey. You know, who knows in the next... 25 years, it could be the reality of the dream two with my coaching.
Maybe that's why that book never closed, because there's still chapters to be
written. Who knows? Like I say, I'm glad that I've come as far as I've come with the book, where I didn't write it at the end of my football career, because I've had to go through what I've gone through to close that chapter of my life and the rediscovery of my love for football. So I'm so happy that the book's come out when it has. And like I say, gives me the opportunity of exploring other avenues in my football journey, which hopefully will open up doors to my next career.
What's it called, by the way, the book? Just so
I just said it. Reality of the Dream.
Oh, Reality. Yeah. Sorry, I missed that.
It's the Reality of Dreams. My unique journey from non-league to the Premier League.
Go and buy it.
We appreciate you coming on, mate. Yeah,
thank you
with us, mate.
Really enjoyed that. Appreciate your time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.